Welcome to The Heart of It, where we take our listeners to the heart of healthcare. I'm your host, Dr. Victoria Lee, and I'm thrilled that for our first season, we'll be speaking with some of the exceptional people at Fraser Health that are at the heart of healthcare. As we begin today's podcast, I'd like to start by acknowledging that we are joining you from the unceded, shared, and traditional territories of the Coast Salish people, particularly Catesy, Kwatlen, Coquitlam, Tsawwassen, and Semiahmoo First Nations, as well as home to Surrey Delta Métis Association. I'm honored to have Dr. Asim Grover with us, who is a family physician, and I would say site medical director extraordinaire in terms of what he does at Fraser Health. And renowned for his innovative approaches in substance use and healthcare delivery in a rural community. It seems such a pleasure to have you on the show. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So I love to hear about stories of how people get started in healthcare. And I'm curious about whether it was a calling or what drew you to health, or was it just by chance?
Yeah, so I remember in high school, I told my dad that I wanted to be a teacher. And my dad, being a physician, strategically just took that, didn't say much, absorbed it, and then came back to me when we had a bit of a long road trip. At that time, we were living in Newfoundland. So we had, you know, a good distance driving from Newfoundland to back to Abbotsford, which is where I was born and grew up. But we temporarily were living in Newfoundland for a few years because my dad was a new to Canada physician.
Okay.
Yeah. And so that's where he got a contract.
And where did he come from?
So he was India. He was born and raised in India, yes. His medical license out there, and then came back here and got a job. And at that time, just like now, there was an HHR crisis. And so he did some refinement with his medical licensure, and then he got a job there in Newfoundland.
How did that then spark your career choice in health?
Yeah, so when I told my dad, I told him my reasons why, and it was because I wanted to teach kids.
Mm-hmm.
So he took that, absorbed that, and then on our drive home, we had
pediatrician.
Well, he was saying, well, if you become a doctor,
yeah,
you can help teach kids, but you can also help adults, communities, as well as the elderly. I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but but essentially he pitched in that direction. And so that kind of opened up my eyes and saying, okay, there's limitless opportunities to actually teach and help.
So what happened with addictions? And I think I remember reading that you didn't think you were going to go into that area, but somehow it came to you.
Yeah, it was a very interesting path. So after I finished my residency, I did my family medicine residency at the St. Paul's program. And several of the patients had sort of concurrent addiction related issues when they were admitted in hospital.
Yeah.
So the exposure, sort of this subconscious level, was quite high. And you get to kind of see, you know, how various subspecialties manage various cases. So I did my rural family medicine rotation in Hope. I was born and raised in the Fraser East. So Hope wasn't something that was far from me. You know, I grew up from Abbotsford, Chilliwack, Agassiz, and Hope. So I was very familiar with the area. But after I kind of got to see everything that a family physician, especially a rural family physician, but still close to home, can do, it was a pretty easy sell for me. So then I tried it out for a few years, and then before you knew it, I loved it.
Just talking about the wonderful team that you have the privilege of working with, and I've had the privilege of meeting with and connecting with.
We have a very young team. And there's one thing I learned over the last 8 years is that a lot of the healthcare providers, when it comes to recruitment, if they can see themselves working with you or feel connected to you, they'll come and work with you. And so we had a very young sort of group of people, and we ended up recruiting a lot of young individuals. And we looked at sort of two criteria: integrity and are you willing to grow? It wasn't about are you the best performing physician, but those two criteria were very, very instrumental. And then that led to a larger group. And then before you knew it, almost for a brief moment of time, one of the highest doctors per capita in BC.
one of the times that we saw how extraordinary they are, you see it every day, but the world got to see it during the flooding in 2021.
On the Sunday when we had the call that this was happening, that basically there were a few critically unwell patients that were brought to the hospital, and they had no choice. They had to be brought to the hospital. And with the weather and the way that the water was rising, it was essentially, well, we were told that it was impossible to get to. We, on that call, it was a very unique call where we had to say that we were okay with leaving this call, knowing that there may be a young adolescent that could die in that emergency department. And when I brought that up, there was some individuals that said, okay, how can we help? How can we get there? We need to bring sort of a team to go support your colleague and support this individual. And that's what kind of led to that story, where through various calls to police departments, with EHS, with CN Rail and CP Rail as well, we worked together to take 2.5 to 3 hours to get to Hope through water, essentially. And it was a RT, myself, a critical care nurse, and then one of the ICU docs, and we managed to get there. Mm-hmm. Also, what we were told is the hospital is running out of medication. So we had to go to stop in Chilliwack to pick up the medication, and then we took a high rail truck through the water. through the water, yeah, which could get derailed at any moment. Mm-hmm. But we're wearing our puffy vests, and hopefully we float if in any case anything happens. But anyways, we got our totes and we go through the high rail truck all the way down, and we make it to Hope and bring the totes, as well as then have a critical care team with all the allied health to support this individual so we can make it out there. The most unique thing happened at that time, within around 2 a.m. to 4 a.m., because we, you know, with all this adrenaline, you can't sleep. With how chaotic the weather was, there was a weather window. Now, weather window meaning the winds prior to this were blowing at 60 to 70 kilometers an hour. It was pouring rain. It was too dangerous for ambulance to even do road transfers, right? Yeah. That's how bad it was. But there was a weather window between 2 to 4, and I walked outside with some of the team just to get a sense of how bad it is, because this person needed to be flown out. And the weather just stopped and died down. And then we got on the phone and we managed to chopper them out between 3 and 3:30 in the morning, right over to Children's Hospital because of that weather window. And then the weather got bad again.
Going back to that story, we have this young patient in front of us that if we don't find a way to get that person to Children's, it was a life and death situation. So you have CP Rail, you've got police, you've got all kinds of transportation walking through every step of the way to find that heroic window to be able to get the patient treated, which was an incredible, I think, story. But not only a story, because that happened every day for many, many days, where helicopters became part of your daily life.
Our nurses are resilient. We were flying in pregnant nurses that wanted to help out.
Yeah.
Just to kind of show you the team effort. It's really, with those smaller hospitals, if you don't have that family culture, they don't survive. And so everyone that worked at that hospital, even some of the nurses that were doing their training, they all wanted to help because they had some sort of connection to that hospital. And so they wanted to keep it alive. They wanted the people in there to do well, and they wanted their colleagues to be safe and supported as well. Because it's a very different perspective when you're stuck and stranded versus you're coming in to help.
Yeah.
And so it was definitely very unique to see.
What advice then would you give healthcare professionals working in rural settings?
It really allows you to maintain skills and be the Swiss Army knife of the health authority. And it allows you to maintain certain skills where you can be plug and play into sort of any scenario and be extremely valuable. And there's the microclimates are real. Yeah. At one moment, 6 months from now, there's going to be forest fires. You're going to be driving right past fires. they're going to say on the news, don't drive that direction. But then our doctors are hopping in their car and going in that direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really special to have that.
I really do feel blessed. And I think that's it's a perspective thing. You know, everyone is going through their own struggles. They have their own challenges. And I totally acknowledge that those are real. And they come at different times. You never know when something bad can happen. But I think that one thing that's taught me here is that your life could be very different if things didn't fall the right way. And I always take that sort of stance. I'm very blessed. I'm very lucky to have, you know, a supportive wife, a 20-month baby that's healthy. And it allows me to sort of channel an inner drive, having great colleagues. So I'm in a leadership role, but I'm not necessarily always a leader. I'm constantly learning stuff from my colleagues. And with that open mind, we have to take a moment to actually remember when we were applying for med school, applying to become a resident. What do we want to do? When you go back to those sort of grassroots level thoughts, just remember those things. It's very powerful and impactful. It allows you to sort of remember and recognize why am I doing what I'm doing, and reflect on your journey to get to where you are. It's okay to be frustrated. It's okay to have a bad day. And it's okay to say, well, I worked really hard today and I'm tired. And so those are all okay things to acknowledge, because those are components of being vulnerable. But at the same time, not to remember, look, you've gone through a hell of a journey to get here. And always make sure that is this what you want to continue to do? Is this where are you making a difference? Because that's what we signed up for.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of goes back to the first question that I asked you about, was it a calling for you?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I would have to say that for all our healthcare professionals that actually do feel, you know, a little bit tired, a little bit burnt out, a little bit frustrated, I think that reflecting on sort of your journey to get to where you are is one of the most important and most valuable things you can do, because it allows you to recognize that you've come a long way, and always reflect, are you doing impactful work? Are you doing all this stuff? And so
looking at your unrelenting positivity, and I think sometimes that positivity can fuel finding different ways and new ways of doing things. And when it comes to combating the toxic drug crisis, you found different ways to reach out to people.
I'm always trying to find out the why rather than sort of the how and so forth, the how and the what first. And so when I look at the why, I say, why not? Why can't we get to the people using substances before the drug dealers do? And so it was just a conversation that came from one discussion with outreach worker. You know, there's only a few of us that are working there in addictions and hope in the Fraser Canyon, and we knew it was a problem. And so how are we able to get to the people purchasing the substances before the drug dealers do? Or do we have to develop a relationship with the drug dealers in this crazy way so we can work together? Because I think when we look at common grounds, a lot of the drug dealers don't want their patients to die. And we don't want our patients to die. As I know, as crazy as it sounds, but I went on a venture to meet the drug dealers in those in our communities. We gave them tons of naloxone kits. And what we found was that everyone that we saw using substances had naloxone kits.
Mm.
What we were really making sure when we were talking to these drug dealers was that these people weren't using alone. You know, that was relatively successful. I would actually say that, you know, the overdose death rate would probably be higher without doing those sort of things. And we're top three already in BC per 100,000. So you can only just imagine how much higher it would be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do see a bit of a theme of that unrelenting positivity leading to you finding ways to ensure that patients get service.
We want to know how are we going to be able to do this, and what is the safety risk?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that's an important piece too. Because sometimes the risks when clinicians are trained to be risk averse, we're all trained to be risk averse because we're dealing with people's lives. So often it's easier to say, well, there's a risk of working with a drug dealer, or there's a risk of going on those helicopters. There's a risk of X, Y, Z. You just fill the risks.
Yeah, we almost died on that helicopter ride from Boston Bar to Hope. We had to take an emergency landing on the Fraser River because we almost hit a power line. Just to give some context.
Yeah, I remember seeing a picture that you shared with me.
And we landed in Yale, which is about a 7-minute drive, 10-minute drive to Hope. But we had to stop because it was too dangerous to fly any further. The military gave me this sort of sleeping bag vest and said, get comfortable, we're staying the night. And then luckily, a CP Rail flashed their floodlights down, and a few people that lived in the area came running down because it's a canyon, right? And so they were taking a look, and they're looking down, and then all of a sudden, some local people came running down the hill.
It's that community again.
Yeah, that's right.
A sense of care.
That's right. And I remember them saying, holy crap, are you guys okay? He's like, where'd you guys come from? And then, you know, the military saying whatever they had to say. I'm still in the helicopter at the time. And then they said, there's a safe landing spot. We can fly you up onto the highway and land on the highway. The reason why we had to do that, because the water was so rampant, and if the levels rose, it could take away the helicopter. And they had to sit, and their mission is to always to make sure the helicopter's okay. So these guys that lived around the area took like sawzalls or little chainsaws and cut some trees down so we could land right next to the highway.
Wow. What an incredible story, right? Yeah. And I don't think we want all the clinicians to take that level of risk, because that might not be something that I would promote per se for all the Fraser Health family members, but I would love to hear your thoughts on how would you like to see others approach like risk in terms of finding the kinds of solutions that you have.
I would say that sometimes it is hard balancing that risk and seeing what that fine line is. I think obviously, you know, safety and reducing risk is obviously the best thing to do. And those are just sort of unprecedented times. Just obviously, you know, we had to fly to Boston Bar at that time because there was a 2-year-old that needed help. There was no food in the community. There was a lot of other things that were happening. Some people needed addiction related medication, then there were withdrawal, and then they needed some psychiatric injections. There were so many things that were needed at that time. And they were at the breaking point. And that's why I took a leap there to do that risk. But to be fair, you know, on a day-to-day basis, safety and balancing risk is the most important thing. When you addiction medicine and people sometimes they hear it, but they don't really recognize it, is probably one of the hardest things to do. You're applying trauma-informed care. You're registering the social inequities. There are things that med school doesn't just train you for to be ready for this. You're seeing, when you talk to patients that struggle with addictions, they come in the door and they say to you, my friend just died, or I've had a history of sexual assault. I have this cancer, but I can't get it addressed. Like, there's so many different things that you're dealing with that are so heavy on a day-to-day basis. And even if you want to get them to the appropriate care, they just won't be able to get there because the structure is just so tough for them to navigate on a day. They are just trying to stay alive, let alone some of the primary care aspects and even what some of the secondary aspects of their health. And so doing addiction medicine, what it helped me understand was meet them where they're at and have those conversations, because they will trust you and they will be with you.
So the same question that I ask all my guests, what is one thing that you'd like to let our listeners know about our health system?
It's a great question. I think what I would say about the health system is that we are going through some challenging times. And I think that that whenever there's opportunity for reflection on your journey to where you are right now, take those moments, because they're invaluable.
Thank you so much, Asim, for sharing your journey with us about the care in the community and how we can work together more from acute to community as well.
Well, thank you for having me. And hopefully I've made some new healthcare workers excited about getting involved in some rural care opportunities.
That's all for today on the Heart of It podcast. Join us next time as we continue to get the heart of healthcare. And please don't forget to subscribe and rate this podcast. The Heart of It is a Fraser Health production. I'm Dr. Victoria Lee, your host. Vanessa Wasno and Kevin Smith are our producers. Recording and editing is done by Fraser Health Communications and Public Affairs.